we're happy to see.
You're on.
I'm on.
Everybody's on. We're recording.
Okay.
Let me know if you would like me to do it, or you can.
You can go ahead and do it. I don't think it's good to have the American flag behind me today, so I'm going to just go ahead. I'm not taking any chances. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world-famous Comedy Cellar, coming at you on Sirius XM 99, Raw Dog, and on the Riotcast Podcast Network. This is Dan Natterman. With me, the owner of the world-famous Comedy Cellar, Mr. Noam Dorman, coming to us from his estate in Westchester County. And boy, what a show would we have today. It's going to be a hot one, folks. So buckle up. We have Seton Smith, Comedy Cellar comedian Seton Smith. Mike Kaplan, he's a regular on this show, bringing a more liberal point of view, typically, and frequently crossing swords with Noam, our producer Perry L. Ashenbrand, and Coleman Hughes, who's been, described as a public intellectual. And he recently was hired by the Manhattan Institute to write for City Journal, which is their commentary on urban policy, politics, and culture. And congratulations, by the way, Coleman recently graduated from Columbia, class of 2020. The cursed class of 2020. Congratulations and welcome, Coleman Hughes. Obviously, we're going to talk today about what the entire world is talking about, of course. The terrible tragedy in Minneapolis. Noam, why don't you start things off for us and get us rolling?
Well, I mean, I don't know how to start it. And by the way, we don't have to limit it to Minneapolis. There's all sorts of, that's the worst of them all, but there's a bunch of things that have happened in the last couple of weeks between Arbery and the woman in Central Park, and maybe they're related. Related in the same conversation. I mean, we've had some conversations with, on this show and on the Comedy Cellar podcast. And it was very difficult for me. It kind of reminded me of the time I was hanging out with Stephen Calabria. You guys know Stephen Calabria? Most of you know Stephen Calabria. And I was complaining about my wife. And I really was complaining about her. And he says to me, I know, she really is like that. I'm like, motherfucker, that's my wife. Like, you can't talk about her that way. You know? and that's kind of the situation. It's like, there are certain things that just can't come out of a white mouth right now, for the most part. Even questions, not I mean advocating something horrible. I mean, just to question things without being received emotionally as just you shouldn't be.
It is really hard to be white today.
And, so
always hard to be white.
I just say, and so yesterday I was having this conversation with Will Silvince and Artie Fuqua. Now, you have to know that Will Silvince and Artie Fuqua are like two of the most integral people in the Comedy Cellar. These are deep, deep members of the Comedy Cellar family and history. They've been extremely generous with the club over the years, continue to be. They're responsible, for contributing to the success of the club, even the roof over my head. And yet, when we were speaking, I realized, that it was a tough situation. I had to choose between challenging on certain things that I just didn't agree with, right or wrong, and challenging, and then imagining them withdraw and say, "Oh, he's just another white guy, just like all the others," or kind of like nodding my head and pretending that I'm in full agreement, and sacrificing the sincere intimacy of the friendship, which is a real cost of that, even if nobody ever discusses it. Because when you really are a friend with somebody, you don't feel like you have to pretend about something important and can live a whole life where you tell them things that you know they expect to hear from you, but it's not really how you feel. And that's a cancer on a friendship. So I found that unpleasant. And I opted to be honest because I think in the long run, that's way the better way to be. And I think the friendship, I think as the dust settles, people remember that and they forgive you. That's been my experience in things that I've had. So anyway, having said that as a preface, you can take this conversation anywhere we want. Seton.
Yes, sir.
So I don't know, what is your whole take on all this? How does it make you feel? I'd emailed you earlier in the week
man.
And I asked you, you said, I said, you must be very, very angry. And that's not just because your email address is, what is it?
Greatness in Black.
Greatness in Black.
Yeah, I thought of that at 17. I just never let it go.
And you said something to me, and I was surprised, and I like I was talking about before, I presume you're being honest, that you said it was more important to you that justice was done, that it would make you more angry, that the incident itself didn't make you as angry. So I don't know if you've changed your mind.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of layers on the whole conversation.
Well, go ahead.
I'm going to try the first one. First one is the shock of the video. The shock of the video is a legitimate, scare. Like, yo, that's horrific. I think we all agree on how horrific it is. And then the second thing is, I completely agree with the riots. I'm annoyed with people who say we shouldn't riot. I'm just like, well, fuck it. What should we wait to a college championship game before we riot? Fuck you. Let's riot.
Define riot. Does riot?
I would go with social unrest that lets go of a certain amount of frustration.
Does define riot mean burning down the?
Yes, that needs to be happening. Burn down as much as the white kids do with the college coach. They burn down the equal amount. We can do that. Fine.
So let's say it spread to New York and they burn down the olive tree. You would look at me and say, that's okay. It's cool, Noam.
if our rioting had the ability to burn down the entire country, then I think race relations would be completely different in the first place. So I don't even think that's a valid parallel.
I could own any one of those businesses.
That's not my point. My point is, if we had the ability to riot and the riots went from all the way from there all the way here across the country, then that's a whole, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Our conversation would be completely different because that would be, we as black people would have a lot more power than we do right now. Okay, that's my second point. Third point is this, and this is all, I think in the conversation that what you was related to, I think what's not being factored in is, and this is an analogy, I don't know if anybody wants to agree with this, let's take out race, let's take out black people for a second. If you send a soldier over to Iraq and he goes through some shit, comes back here, we take the time to train them to be a soldier, but we never take the time to train them to actually deprogram them to trauma. You took all this time to train us to be slaves. Then you just said, let us vote for free and go, all right, be free now. But there's no social, psychological structure to take away from the trauma. And therefore, generation after generation, people have trigger points to these traumas. And we all in this group has had to take psychology before. We all know what triggers and associations are. And it's clearly what's going on right here. But to say, white person of value, crazy. Well, yes, we are crazy because of these triggers here that needs to be addressed. And so, yes, I don't think that the riot's going to help with progress. I think the progress has already been happening with Obama years where the FBI is actually, they have a system now where the FBI goes in and changes these things and actually puts them under investigation. So I think emotionally speaking, hey, man, I've been fucked up by cops before too. I understand the anger. That's crazy.
Noam mentioned before, honesty versus saying what you want to hear.
Yeah, but I didn't really mean it. I didn't mean it, Steve. What the fuck's the matter with you?
I'm saying, Steve, are you ready for Noam's complete honesty?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I already can guess it. I've already been on the show a couple times.
No.
Never with an issue this sensitive, I don't think.
They're always this sensitive to me. I always believe my life's on the line, so...
I don't have any outlandish positions on this, by the way. I mean, I hope I did. I might have made it seem like I'm have a worse position than I do. But I mean, my positions will come out, I think, as they come up. So Coleman, you want to respond to that, or or take it anywhere you want?
Coleman, can we hear him?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh,
not well, Coleman.
Get off you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you now.
That's good. Yes.
Okay, so. What's happening now is in many ways similar to what happened in 2014 in Ferguson. A black man was killed, and there was riots as a result. And I went to Ferguson about a year ago because there's some folks who've been making a documentary about it for several years. And they took me around and they showed me every business, many of them black owned, that used to exist on the street just around the corner from where Mike Brown was killed. And to this day, most of them are abandoned buildings. And that's the thing I think people don't realize about riots is that it's in the heady passion of the moment, it's perfectly understandable to try to just understand the rage rather than to condemn it. I totally understand that instinct, but at the same time, 5 years from now, when those businesses still haven't returned, where there's, you know, fewer employment opportunities in that neighborhood as a result. And it's not you or I living in that neighborhood. We're not the kids growing up in the circumstance where like 2 out of 3 buildings are abandoned. You know, that's the long-term consequence of the riots that almost nobody talks about when the riots are happening. Cities don't just bounce back from this, and it's not us that have to live with the consequences. And so I think people want to support the riots because they understand the anger of watching this cop murder this black dude. And I understand that anger, but I don't think you should conflate the anger with the support of the riots themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that it's funny because I had emailed Coleman about this rioting thing, and I had foreshadowed exactly this conversation because I'd had this conversation before where somebody, a friend of mine, this was during Ferguson, said, I said, well, what if I burn down the olive tree? And she said, yeah, well, you know, and I was like, holy shit, you know. But, you know, think about what you're saying. First of all, yet another, you know, Israeli bar mitzvah is blown up by a Palestinian terrorist. So some Israelis go and they burn down some Palestinian neighborhood. None of us would think that was an appropriate reaction because Coleman is making the practical case against riots, and that's legit, but there is something, if we're going to say that it's okay to punish innocent people for things they had nothing to do with, couldn't have prevented, and might have worked even against, then we should really figure that out, how you're going to do that arithmetic, because that upends everything I thought I knew about morality. I mean, that upends the argument against terrorism. That upends everything about two wrongs don't make a right. What you're saying is that if these people do something outrageous, I can turn my anger at any innocent person and just take away everything they have.
No, can I say something? Angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta say something.
I actually don't think you believe that. Go ahead, Dan.
If you think of it in terms of a war, as some people might, then the ends justify the means, just like you might agree with the Hiroshima bombing.
Even in war, that's not allowed. Even in war, that's not allowed.
What do you think of the morality of the Hiroshima bombing?
Yeah, but well, many people think that was wrong, but war, you are not allowed to target civilians in a war, but go ahead, Seton.
Okay, here's my point. I didn't say I agree with the riots. I said I understand where they're coming from. When you put a bunch of negative energy to a situation, a bunch of negative energy is gonna bounce back. And that being said, I'm going to go on a bigger level. I personally don't agree that the police should exist in the way it does. I don't believe in our justice system. And when I say I don't believe in justice. I think the term justice is a dark part of somebody, of the human mind, that's all about revenge. And revenge begets more revenge, begets more revenge. Every time I see somebody that gets justice, they get horrible things happen for them. They become more of a criminal, their family gets more messed up, and the economy gets more messed up. I don't believe in the prison system. Plus, the prison system was created after slavery. So we have the biggest slavery system in the world before, and now we have the biggest prison system in the world, which is also no coincidence. So I don't believe in I don't believe in justice. But if you're going to go around shooting black people, they're going to act out and go crazy too, just like every other group of people. I mean, one more thing I gotta say. Have you noticed that our police force policy is similar to all our international policies? They go and they go into a country and they take over and they kill people and then they just stay there for a while. And anybody who acts up against the new regime, our ghetto policy and our Afghan policy is the same. And I'm done now.
So let's get Mike Kaplan. Now Mike is like a woke white guy, and if he's like most woke white guys I know, he's read about black people in books. So what do you want to say, Mike?
Noam, thank you for that introduction. I think you have been very fair and measured, fair and balanced, I might even say. When you said at the beginning how difficult it is to be able to say what you want to your black friends for fear that they might judge you based on what you are saying, that made me initially think of how I imagine it is for Black people to perhaps interact with, let's say, the police in situations where they are treated unfairly and they are afraid to say what they believe is true and fair and kind and just and right for fear that the police might misunderstand their intentions and the police might not want to be friends with them the way your friends might not want to be friends with you. And I think the stakes are equivalent. So I would say, I think there's a lot of, so to speak, black and white thinking that humanity engages in on issues like this. Whereas it's not that you, when Seton says, I understand why people riot, I understand why there is anger. We can all understand why there is anger. We can also, all reasonable people, when in safety, in a reasonable place, I think most people that we know and care about, regardless of your political beliefs, would say, I would prefer there to be fewer buildings burned down, fewer people harmed, fewer innocent people harmed, of course. And so what is the cause? What is the root? Why did people start rioting in this situation? Because how do we get to the root of the problem, which in this case was a man murdering another man, which is a thing that has happened like this and has roots going back so far as, you know, 1619, the origins of our country. And I know you might be saying, well, okay, but where are we now? How do we move forward from here now? But you're starting in the middle. You're starting in the middle by saying, like, what if they burn down my building? Well, then let's try to make it so that there aren't as many people doing things that make people be so angry. Wait, it's not a measured decision to burn down a building.
Hold on. I'm not starting in the middle. I'm starting from the, let's start from the historical reality that the civil rights movement made tremendous strides in the face of much, much, much more regular and equally horrible daily abuse and hatred without without violence. So that there was nothing more powerful ever than nonviolent protest. So I'm not trying to relegate anybody to hopeless and futile gestures.
Can I jump in real quick? Just a quick Martin Luther King quote. He said that a riot is the language of the unheard. Please continue.
He may have said that.
He said that in the one time in 67, but there's literally 10 years of him giving the same speech about why nonviolence is the way to go. So I think that's cherry picking.
For sure.
Yeah. And so I'm not trying to say that anybody that they shouldn't. I'm not trying to force them to say, well, I'm going to give you this option, and I know it's not really going to. It really won't work.
I guess what I'm saying to you, Noam, is when you're saying, like, what if people burn down this? People should stop burning things down. They shouldn't be violent. I think a more important place to start is the cops shouldn't be violent. That is important to say.
We can start there. Let's start with the cops. So I mean, I think you're using like a rhetorical device there. The more important, it's not either or. I'm not trying to talk about one and not the other.
No, I think it's more important that the powerful shouldn't be violent because they can do more damage.
Seton brought up the riots, so that's why we talked about the riots. I didn't say let's start with the riots. That's not fair to me. We can start with the.
We're not. I don't think we're attacking you. I think y'all are having a great fight. I want y'all to continue fighting, but I don't want you to feel attacked.
Let's just say in the course of this podcast. We have to talk about both issues and give them both lots of time, regardless of the order. It's not to say one is more important than the other, but let's just decide on one for now.
Yeah. So let's finish up with the riots. I mean, Mike, I don't know. Did anybody in your family own businesses? What kind of family you come from?
My parents, most of my family has been teachers. My grandmother was a nurse, and my parents and my grandfather and grandmother were teachers.
Well, do they have houses?
Yes. I grew up in a house.
So let's say, you know, let's say they come in a riot and they burn down your house. I can't believe that there's a large constituency of people out there that think this is okay. And it's not only is it counterproductive to the neighborhood, it loses you, as soon as you advocate that, you lose 30% of the people who were with you. Like, okay, but you know what? I'll see you when you get back, because if you're talking about, you know, ruining burning down people's businesses now, you've lost me. I'm not quite with you anymore.
Noam, I think that nobody here is advocating burning down businesses. I am for nonviolence. I don't want any businesses burned down. I think what Seton said and what I also agree with is we understand where the anger comes from that leads to that.
Here's the thing, though, I understand. I understand all of it. Like, I understand the anger of the protesters, well, rioters, I should say, in this case. But I saw a woman on the news who lives in Minneapolis. She seemed like 50 or 60 year old black woman who lived in a building that for mostly disabled people, it seemed. And she was crying for 2 minutes about how the rioters were destroying the only shops that were close enough for her to get to in her position. This woman is in tears, right? I also understand her side of it too. And it's worth noting that, like, what percentage of the residents of this place are actually rioting? It's gotta be in the single digits, right? So the other-
A lot of out of town has been arrested. You're right, a lot of out of town has been arrested for these things.
So that's what the mayor said, and that's happened at a lot of riots. I'm told by the people making the Ferguson documentary that a lot of folks came in not from Ferguson and had their fun and then left. But it also seems like I saw some conflicting evidence that a lot of folks were actually from Minneapolis. So I'm not sure what to believe about that now. I think we just got to wait for the full thing.
But I think that's harping on this riot and calling it like the worst thing in the world is definitely a distraction from the main point. I mean, there's a bigger point here that's going on, that this riot is going to be forgotten. I mean, yes, there's been a bunch of riots. There's going to be a bunch more riots. And they're all going to come from a real legitimate reason. Maybe I'm the only person in this room who's had his house busted by Catholic folks.
Wait a minute.
But this is like a psychological thing that if they don't address, it's going to keep happening. So to blame the victims is in going on in circles. Only, listen, I'm not actually mad at you, Coleman. This is Noam sent me a link earlier of John McWhorter saying the same argument. And I'm annoyed more with John than I am with you. But I do think that it's missing the point. Like, it's just blaming black people. And also just, again, white kids riot every fucking season. Every month they burn down the car. Why is this a bad thing?
Eaton, lean forward, because when you lean back, we lose your audio.
Okay. I think I agree with you that the best way to prevent the riots are by fixing the systemic problems with the police. Right? That's the most likely place where we're going to prevent a riot. Once a black person gets killed, murdered,
it's too late.
And that video gets out, there's very little that one can do at that point if people want to riot. Unless you happen to be from the community, you're respected, you know, like Killer Mike gave the speech in Atlanta. People like that potentially can calm a riot. And I saw a video about how, you know, James Brown may have prevented a riot when Dr. King died in Boston. But like, a couple people have the clout and standing to do that. But for the rest of us, it doesn't matter how much I condemn it. You know, it's not going to matter. But we could also say that there's not that much any of us can do about any of this individually. But the point that I was getting to a point.
Slap down. We do this shit.
The best way to stop the riot is to.
Sorry. What I'm saying is the riots are a huge, huge, huge problem that people don't. If you care about unemployment, all of the issues that people care about in terms of inequality, unemployment, like abandoned buildings, cycles of poverty, like the effect that a single riot has on this in a city can last for decades. And no one is out there 10 years from now when-
Is this one that bad? I mean, listen, I know what you're saying. I live in DC, the 68 riots didn't even get cleaned up until 2002. I remember seeing that shit.
That's what I'm saying. And who suffers?
But is this one that bad?
I don't know.
Noam, back up, because we can hear your audio.
That's one, Mike.
I want to say one.
Mike, one, nothing.
There's about 100 people who get killed unarmed by the cops every year. And last year, last year was a little under 100, and 9 of them were black. 19 of them were white. And if you adjust for population, you find that a black person is somewhat more likely to suffer that fate than a white person is. But overall, the numbers are very low. Every single one of them is a tragedy.
May I question those numbers? May I question those numbers? Only because if you look at all the videos where cops say one story and the video tends to always say there's another story. So, like, for example, the South Carolina dude. Remember that dude who got shot 8 times in the back and then the cop shot him and then he dropped the gun right next to him and said, I had to shoot him because he was armed. So, like, that is only scary. That only because that exists and that has happened a lot, that the statistic thing bothers me. Here's another thing that bothers me about the statistics is that they say more black people create more crimes. That's where more cops are there. But the fact that more laws are created geared towards black people seems to also be forgotten a lot. I hate that phrase, but it always is forgotten. For example, guns aren't allowed in cities. That started with black people in the 60s. Crack versus cocaine. Crack and cocaine are literally the same thing. You got that whole popular drug. The war on drugs in general, which replaced the Jim Crow laws. These are all laws that are specifically ingrained and compounded to get black people. And then, you know, you can put a gun on them and plant them and shoot them. So, I mean, I'm sure we all know all this stuff right now, but I don't believe those statistics. It's scary. Go ahead.
Let me share some of the statistics that I've seen, because this is kind of where I get into trouble, which is that,
we're not here to play it safe, Noam. So go ahead.
In trouble. Tell me your point.
No. It's because I don't want to work from faulty statistics, but we do all want data. It's like, it reminds me of like comparing cops to like, it's going to come out wrong. Can I compare the cops? The thing that comes to my mind is like when you read about pit bulls being dangerous and you don't, to this day, I don't know, are they really more dangerous or is it just because we focus on pit bulls and then the stories of the pit bulls hit the news all the time? And so you want the data, just like with COVID, we want the data. And unfortunately the data, now this data could be wrong, but this is the data that's available to me. And if there's other data, I really want to see it. I've asked Perielle to find it, whatever. And she sends me, you know, poetry, but anyway,
excuse
NPR.
Me.
Okay, come on. NPR.
Wait, tell me what it is, Noam. Tell me.
Can you see it?
No, just tell me what the study is.
Oh, NPR. New study says white police officers are not more likely to shoot minority suspect. That was an NPR. And then a couple years ago, there was an article in the Sunday Times by a black guy from Harvard who I recall from the article said it was the most surprising finding in his career, which found that although police are much more likely, and you can see it here, if you can see it, to use hands with black people, 17% more likely, push into a wall, 18% more likely, use pepper spray, 25% more likely, although it was 5 cases as opposed to 4, but we're less likely to shoot black people than white people. So these are the stats that are out there, and it's very difficult.
Can I ask a question? I got to ask, I didn't get to see that. Follow up. Was that question, that article stated that black police are less likely to shoot black people or they have shot less black people? What was that?
Coleman, you can answer. Coleman, more familiar with
Roland Fryer, he looked at a huge database of police shootings. I think, what was it, national or was it just in the city of Houston? And he tried to compare apples to apples in every case and see how likely the cops are to shoot a black suspect versus a white suspect in the same scenario using the whole aggregate data. He found that black cops were more likely to put their hands on a black suspect, rough him up, but less likely to actually pull a trigger. And that was the result he called the most surprising in his career.
I gotta look more into that. I'm very curious. I'm curious. I wanna know if it is Houston or if it's national. And I also want to know, again, about what exactly stats are writing down, because, again, the cops have been proven to plant guns on motherfuckers, like, the entire time as a policy. So I can't agree with their words, because most of what they're doing is showing that they, and here's the thing, too, none of them, well, I'm glad the cops are finally coming out and apologize, but, like, I mean, this 90% of this whole thing is relationship, and also it's that whole justiceless system thing, so, I don't know.
Can I?
I also don't think this answers my question about the fake compounding of laws that are addressed towards black people. That actually doesn't apply to that at all. But go ahead.
I just wanted to offer, like, the part of them being more likely to use force is also, you know, a large problem that, like, in the past day, like, with some of the videos that I've been seeing, like, where police are just, like, shoving, like, hard people, like, out of their way, like, small people, women, all genders of people. Like, this is a, I mean, it seems like the way that, like, when we were talking about the way that soldiers are trained, the way that the police are trained or aren't trained, like, what goes into becoming a police officer? What is in a person who wants to be a police officer? Why do they want to be? And what are their thoughts about, like, protecting and serving the community? Like, a mile from my house, you know, at the Barclays Center last night, I heard sirens all night. The video's coming out of it. It's horrifying that, like, of the people who are, I don't know what happened before, but there, every video that I've seen where somebody's like, I just, like, a cop said, get out of the way, and then immediately, like, shoved people, and they hit their heads, they're in the hospital, they're, like, it doesn't, it's mind-boggling, like, what is happening in the police?
Yeah. Back to the whole pit bull analogy. Let me put one more thing. That's what they are. They're pit bulls who aren't managed well. Go ahead, Noam.
Hold on. Let me read one more thing into the record, and then says it. So this was in New York Magazine. It was referencing the Washington Post study on this stuff. This was during the time that Kaepernick was kneeling. It says, the Post has indeed found that there's a strikingly consistent number of fatal police shootings each year, close to 1,000 people of all races. But that figure includes the armed and the unarmed. Fatal police shootings of the unarmed, the issue Kaepernick and Reed cite, are far fewer. In the first 6 months of this year, for example, I suppose that was 2018, the Post found a total of 27 fatal shootings of unarmed people, of which black men constituted 7. There are 22 million black men in America. If an African American is not armed, the chance that he'll be killed by the police in any recent year is 0.00006%. If a black man is carrying a weapon, the chance is 0.00075, which is too many, but it seems to me important to get the scale of this right. Our perceptions are not reality. Now, this is where, and this has come to the thing, like, I'm not saying the perceptions are not reality, but perceptions can be, I mean, I don't even know what the perception is. Between a perfect situation, a slight problem, a medium problem, and the problem we seem to think we have, the truth could be anywhere in that range. And I think that if you want to go on record and say out loud, are we sure it's quite as bad as we think it is? Even to say that is not to say that there's not a problem, can get you in trouble. And so Coleman sent me, he was doing some research on this, and I can play it. I played it yesterday. There's almost an identical incident. It's on video, and I can show it right here, of a white guy who is, I mean, it's identical. Okay? He's held underneath a policeman by his knee, on his neck, I think, or on his head, and he dies in Dallas. Never even was in the news.
But there's a lot of black murders that are not in the news either. So that's a good example of specificity. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm going to say?
Well, I guess what we're saying, I mean, so just to be clear, what I've always felt, and it bears out my experience in life, and it makes sense to me, is the following, that the cops treat black people like shit, and that the sadistic cop has an easy time of it. You arrest the guy, he's in the back of the police car, you kick the shit out of him, and when he comes out, you say he was resisting arrest. And I've seen with my own eyes, black friends of mine literally be picked out by the cops, and the cop assumed that they were the guy who the police had been called about, and just have them right up against the car. And I had to say, no, that's that. So I've seen this, and I believe it, and it makes common sense to me. What I've never been sold on is that the cop who shoots somebody in front of everybody with the cameras rolling and is likely to have just woke up that day and said, I'm going to murder somebody today. And I've always felt that much, much more likely when a trigger is pulled to shoot to kill, that is a situation of panic or mistake, you know, actually thought you saw the gun or whatever it is, because like I said, because the hateful sadist has a much more clever way to get his rocks off than by getting arrested, having to turn
What are you saying in this case in Minneapolis, where a gun was not used, but a knee was used on the neck? What do you think Officer Chauvin's intentions were? I mean, he's been accused of assassinating, murdering with intent, but I imagine you believe that certainly was not his intention.
Who are you asking?
You, Noam Dorman.
No, I thought his intention, and believe me, I'm not mitigating the intention here. I thought his intention was a sadistic torture. I don't think he thought the guy was going to drop dead, because I think he's done this many, many times before. And I presume from the reaction of the other three cops who just stood on watching, this may be going a little too far, but it wouldn't shock me that they've seen him do it before, because they didn't seem to react like, holy shit, what are you doing? You know, cut it out. They just sat there. And the autopsy since then have kind of bears that out, that they don't show that he was choked, but that he died from a combination of a pre-existing condition and maybe intoxicants in his blood.
Wait, I got to cut in with the coronary report, because the way they've written that is a bullshit thing. When you put if you put your knee on somebody's neck and put their arms behind their back, you are choking them. You're putting pressure on their chest, and you're creating that. He created that fucking heart attack.
So you might be right.
And also, too, the fact that we've also pointed out these cops that constantly lie and bullshit. We cannot trust their statistics. They've proven the fact from every video they put out.
Let me ask you. Hold on, Mike. You think that the intention of the cop there was to hold him down until he died?
And this is my
I'm asking
this
you serious.
My,
I don't mean,
no, no,
I don't
no.
Mean
I'm explaining this. No, I'm explaining. This is what makes black people mad. You're taking so much time to figure out his intention.
Can't ask me.
No. And you've already dismissed all the rioters. You dismissed all these other thugs as being bad people. And I'm just saying that. I'm just saying. Here's my point.
I answered only because Dan asked me.
The same kind of love you got for this dude should be the love we have for all the sides. We need to see all.
But nobody has any. Nobody has any. Nobody has any love for this. Nobody has any love for this dude. We're trying to assess whether this was cold-blooded, premeditated murder or manslaughter. That's relevant to the punishment that this man is going to receive, and it's also relevant to the just overall to the question of the cop's intentions.
But that's not the point. Here's the thing. Black people aren't afraid of white people intentionally going out and shooting people. We're not afraid of cops with the intention. That's never been our thought. Like, black people going out there. We just know at any moment they can kill us. That's much worse. Do you understand that? It's not a premeditated, it's actually something I can deal with because I can convince you not to kill me. It's the fucking flicking off like, fuck it. I can kill him. I can move on, write it off. That's what's freaking us out. I don't care about his intention.
Steven.
The fact that he can do it is the problem.
Hold on. I just want to say, just for the record, because the second time it kind of happened in this conversation, I'm only answering the question that was put to me about what his intention.
Because Noam brought up the intentions of the cops that shoot.
Yeah.
And he believes that they didn't intend to kill. They didn't wake up in the morning intending to kill. And I asked him if he felt the same way about Officer Chauvin.
Yes, Seton. One white man asked another white man a question, so don't get upset.
Can I make a point?
I think that was on page.
Please
go ahead,
Coleman. The Black Lives Matter movement, which has done a lot of good things, including popularizing the idea that the police should wear body cams, which is still not the law in every state, but I think should be, pushing for outside review board, so that when there's a police misconduct allegation, it's not the police investigating themselves, which obviously is going to yield a biased result. Unfortunately, that's still allowed in lots of cases. So like these are like systematic issues that you know are not reducible to simply bad apples. And there's a lot of areas of reform that like need to happen. And I think that the anger should be channeled there. At the same time, when the conversation too often just becomes about the alleged racism of the cops in a particular instance. And I think that is a mistake for the following reason. Every single video I've seen of a black person getting killed by the cops, whether it was, Tamir Rice or whether it was Alton Sterling or whether it was George Floyd, I have seen an identical video that never went viral, that never went to your social media feed, of a white person getting killed the same way. Dylan Noble, Daniel Shaver killed begging for his life. This guy, Tony Timpa, you know, suffocated for 13 minutes. My point is that there is a problem that goes so, so far beyond race. And when we make it all about the racism of the cops, when we pretend that we know for sure that he wouldn't have done that to a white person, A, we don't know that because they have done it to white people. And B, the moment we do that, it puts white people, I think a lot of white people at least, on the defensive, because they feel like you're attacking them for their racism, when really it could be a conversation about, like, how do we reform the systemic problems with the police so that we are all safer?
Can I jump in real quick?
No. I just want to say one thing I didn't get to say, and then I will stay out for a good long time. You guys can all do it. I just want to make clear.
Please do not.
That video was the most horrible thing I've ever seen. I don't ever remember being affected by a video like that. He killed that guy, regardless of what his intention was. But for some reason, even though you'd think that, like, the guy who got shot in the back, what's the name of the guy who got shot in the back in South Carolina?
Oh, which one? Oh, I don't
know. Anyway, the cop shot. Even though you would think that would be the more horrible, like, even if Floyd hadn't died, the pure sadism and torture that was going on, for whatever reason, was very almost impossible to look at. And so, do I think that he was torturing him with the intention of killing him? No, I don't. Just like the Vietnamese torture in the prison camps, whatever happened to John McCain, let's say, was not with the intention of killing him. It is not any kind of excuse for what went on, or is in no way meant to show some sympathy for the guy who did it. I just don't think death was his intended outcome. That's all I'm saying. That guy should go to jail from what we know now. And that look, I mean, he's begging for his mother. It's impossible to comprehend that. So I just want to make that clear. Now, go ahead.
Did he lie about that in the police report? Did he lie?
Does anybody know what, when somebody is handcuffed on the ground, what the standard procedure is with regard to the police? That is to say, once a guy is on the ground, face down and handcuffed, is the standard operating procedure to simply stand off and leave him on the ground handcuffed, or put him in the car? Like, what are they supposed to do at that point? Does anybody have any insight into that?
Well, regardless of what the official policy is,
know, it's been said that he was on the ground handcuffed, therefore there was no reason to do anything. But I'm just wondering if that's the case and what police procedure is. And I don't know anything about holds. And the holds are authorized, but holds are unauthorized.
I mean, I think either way,
that was not police procedure. He's in handcuffs.
Yeah. No, but when they're in handcuffs, are you supposed to just back away and not touch at all? Or is there ever a reason to further immobilize a guy that's in handcuffs?
No, I think it's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know the answer.
If he's hurting himself, I mean, I think I'm guessing, but there are people situations I've seen where people are hurting themselves or they're having seizures. But from the whole video, I've seen the one where they actually took him in cuffs and he never resisted. There was one part he fell, but there was no explanation of why he fell. If he had a heart situation, then fell, or if he fell and then the situation started, it was one of those kind of things.
So right before we came on, I saw a new article, the police reports come out, the police report came out. I don't know, did you read it, Coleman? And there's some weird facts in there that he was already in the car and they may have taken him, what we might be seeing is after he was already in the car, taken out of the car for some reason, then threw himself down on the ground. So there's some weird factual pattern there. There's clearly more that went on than we've seen so far in that video, none of which, to my understanding, would explain or excuse why that guy had his knee on his neck for that amount of time on the ground. I haven't read anything which would put that into doubt, but there clearly was a longer story to this than we've seen in that video. So you can Google it, or I'll send it to you. afterwards. So, Coleman brought up, you know, like a really important question is, you know, how do we know that this was racism, Seton?
I think that these are questions that I don't know for me if they're important. The fact that it happened is, and it's happened so much with no real hope of ending, it sounds legitimately like this. That's what it is. It's one of those, like, we all are sitting there, all of us Americans sitting there like, oh, that sucks. And none of us know how to stop that shit. That creates a riot.
In a country of 300 million people, unfortunately, the answer to your question, I think, is it probably won't stop any more than freak accidents will stop or the occasional airline crash will stop. It won't.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm just saying it won't stop.
You have a country of...
Funny now. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, slavery in a random plane crash.
No, but wait a minute. To defend Dan a little bit, if you at least the NYPD has kept stats for a long time on unarmed civilians killed by the cops, and it has been going down steadily for decades. It's way less than it was in the 70s and 80s. So it's not
again. There's a video of a dude in South Carolina putting a gun next to a dude he just shot. So these stats are proving over and over again to be iffy, at the least iffy.
Okay. I mean, I think
four dudes watch a dude kill another dude on the ground, and those dude rats wrote more stats. So I'm just saying that our stat motherfuckers are a little questionable. So I'm done saying that.
Would you be ready? I mean, I've had a theory I should have mentioned earlier, but you tell me what you think of this theory. My theory for a long time has been that if the cops day to day didn't treat black people in such a dehumanizing way. And by the way, they treat a lot of people a dehumanizing way, but especially black people. If they hadn't built up all that resentment from the day-to-day black treatment, that the treatment that you've had, the treatment that people we know have had, that I believe when these shootings happened, black people would say, well, you know, I know the cops. They're usually pretty fair. This guy must be a bad apple. I think that much of what we see in the reaction to these shootings is the resentment of all the day-to-day indignities that the cops dish out. I've always felt that way. What do you think?
I think, again, it's still much more deeper. I think it's the laws that have been put in the black community that are, I mean, yes, I think it's part of that. I think it's, yes, over and over dignity, but it's a systematic structure of black people do this specifically, so let's make this outlawed, which has been chronicled throughout our history. I mean, again, the two big ones, which is the guns and the crack. Guns and cocaine. I've met so many white people who do cocaine and they're fine in life. And then they're fine in the sense of they're not going to jail. They're just let go.
You say that like someone who didn't live through New York during the crack epidemic in the 90s. I mean, I know white people do, and black people do cocaine, but crack was something different altogether. I mean, even Spike Lee did a whole movie, you know, where that was a big theme in it. And it wasn't just like a bunch of people in their living room passing around cocaine. It was crack houses, lives being ruined. It was serious.
I'm not saying the drugs weren't ruined, but again, the crack, why is the opioid crisis being handled different than the crack epidemic then? Why? Those people are being treated like a motherfucker, different.
No, I actually agree with you. What I don't agree with you on is that treating crack different than cocaine was a racial thing, but I do think that you're absolutely right.
That was written down during Clinton's, that was literally put in an article. Clinton's administration released that. Go ahead.
Wait a minute.
But I do believe that if it was black people being dying of opioids as white people have been dying, you would see a different reaction. My gut tells me that you're right about that. But go ahead, Coleman.
Coleman had something to say.
I was just gonna say, The laws that penalized crack heavily were very popular amongst black people at the time. It's hard to find a black politician who wasn't in favor of them, in fact.
I agree. I'm not saying it's right.
And those people end up being sort of vindicated, but at the time, a lot of the push was coming from the black community.
These are the same? Okay, all right.
The thing with crack, and this is insidious, and this is just what I think happened, is that people generalized. Now, I knew this wasn't true, just so you know. There was a guy who used to manage the Comedy Cellar before your time. His name was, and he was from Guyana, and he was the number one student in the history of Guyana or something. He got the highest score in the history of the, they give like a standardized test there. And he got the highest score in the history of that test. And he came over, we were friends. He used to manage my band. Then he became manager of the Comedy Cellar. He was very, very like a goody two shoes. And he wound up a crack addict. And his life was ruined. And the way the story played, he's still alive. We're still friends. But the way the story played out was tragic. So I'm aware that what I'm about to say is not true. But I think that people in their ignorance conflated crack abuse with the criminal element. And for that reason, yes, didn't feel sorry for these people whose lives were being ruined by crack. I don't want to say it's racism based out of hate of race, but it was race ignorance for sure, and a lack of curiosity maybe to be sure of that thing. And the opioid thing, it's like, well, these are wholesome white people dying of crack. Holy shit, let's set up a flag, you know? So
whole different world now.
Yeah. So I actually really truly deeply agree with you about that.
So we conflate that. We have cops, we have the drug policies, we have the crazy economic thing, and just crazy pressure. But I don't want to get in a rant, but I'm just saying that, like, you know. That's why people go crazy and riot, because it's just a lot of shit. And it's like, how do you start?
And Noam, when you were talking earlier about like the motivations of this particular police officer, whether he was intending to murder the man or whether he was simply intending to sadistically torture the man, like those are both, I think we all agree, those are both bad motivations. And whether the person is black or white, we don't want the police treating anybody like that. Of course, our country has systemic racism that makes many problems worse for black people that come out differently for white people. But in this case in particular, like, aren't there laws that say, like, if you kill someone in the commission of a crime, like if you're committing a bank robbery, even if you're the getaway driver in certain places, if somebody kills somebody on the inside, you can go to jail for murder, even if you didn't do it. Now, this man, even if he wasn't intending to murder this guy, he was clearly breaking the law, violating this person's rights, assaulting this person.
Mike, there is a murder charge which fits this. It's like reckless homicide, or there is when you do something which is so reckless that you should have known somebody could be killed, there is a charge of murder. It's not a life sentence charge, it's like a 15-year charge or whatever it is. But yeah, that's absolutely a murder charge for that. You're referring to the felony murder rule, but it's a similar philosophy in a way. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So I'm just saying that in this particular case, like, it doesn't matter to me so much. I think, like Seton was saying, like, was he intending to murder the man, or was he only intending to sadistically torture the man? Like, those are so close that I complete
them. You know what,
them.
Mike, can I say something? And maybe after I say it, we'll all notice it. There is always tendency to say, it doesn't really matter, blah, 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 blah. But I don't think that's right. I think everything does matter. It's important to get all the little details right. They come to bear in ways that you couldn't predict, and they come to bear in future ways. It's not good to build up a pattern of events which are portrayed to be something which they weren't quite, and then on the sixth event, everybody reacts as if it's the sixth time it's happened, when actually, if you take a microscope to the previous times, well, each one had its own thing to it. So I'm not saying that it matters in the sense of he's less guilty or less atrocious or, you know, less of a Nazi. But I do bristle at the idea that trying to just get the details right for the sake of getting the details right is somehow an insight into somebody's point of view on something. I don't care which way it comes out. Every detail should not be glossed over. We should get every detail right.
I agree. As long as we don't harp on the details and get on a sidetrack to actually what's important, that's all I agree.
So where do we go from here?
I think we have time enough to parse all the details. I think if you're intellectually curious, if nothing else, you want to slice and dice the details.
Dan, I jump in and say I disagree that we have time to parse all the details infinitely. So you sincerely must choose how much time in our limited lives we spend on in a given conversation, in a given day. Like, where do you start? How much time do you allot? And what details are you focusing on at the expense of what details you're not?
Can I say that I love Mike Kaplan because he is his own dude, all right? I don't know another guy like him, and he's very very pleasant too. All right, so listen, no, I mean that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
He's also sure, I thought he could say something nice about me, but anyway, hold on. So going back to the statistics for a second, and then maybe to go.
I don't
from
think
this,
anybody should be, by the way, penalized for asking a question, Dan, because I see a lot of people merely ask questions and get.
Dan, I'm not penalizing you. I'm okay, just doing as okay. Noam said. I want to be precise. I'm not
okay, enough.
I posed the question: Did he have an intention to kill and was castigated?
Okay.
I think all questions are valid questions.
I want to get back to the statistics, and I want to use that as a way to getting into what is the answer here to heal race relations. The thing about
we should have started with that.
the thing about the statistics, which is so frustrating and confounding, is that if those statistics are true, and you know, and there's quite a few inquiries have come back with these unintuitive or not, counterintuitive results, that would do more than anything one would think to calming people down. What could be more calming than to find out, oh shit, it's really not as bad as we thought. So I think it's urgent that we get to the bottom of those statistics, because if it turns out that we have a police problem, more of a police problem and less of a racial police problem, that would be quite important to know and quite unifying. And I don't
I apologize to you? I got to apologize. I got frustrated with you earlier.
Yeah.
And now I have to accept that, yeah, okay, you're just being paid. You, let me point out, I know you're a good person, but if I did not know you and you said the sentence, we need more evidence, I, as a black man, like, well, what else do you need exactly to show that the cops are after us?
Yeah, well, just to be clear, I never said we need more evidence, but as a person who reads, and I mean, this New York Times thing, this was the front page of one of the sections of the Sunday Times, and you read these things, mm-hmm. or you see it on NPR, and you say, well, I mean, you have two options. You can say, oh, that's bullshit. You know, don't give me that shit. But then you say, well, it's mm-hmm. the Times, and it's NPR, and you say, uh-oh, mm-hmm. what if this is true? What does that mean? I either have to refute it, or mm-hmm. I have to integrate it into my thinking. And what most people do is just pretend it didn't happen.
Okay, can I say something when you're done? Response. Can I say something?
Perry Ell's been quiet. I did instruct Perry Ell early on that we have a full panel tonight, and that
you instructed me.
I just said that, especially if I don't see the video, it's going to be hard distinguishing who's who. So right. We don't want too many people talking. But go ahead.
And really, Noam had said that, you know, he asked me to send him things, and in response, I sent him poetry, which I take great issue with, because first of all, I don't believe that James Baldwin would have considered himself a poet. But in addition
to James Baldwin thing, I've read James Baldwin. Go ahead.
In addition to that, there are the statistics, which you say that, or you know, to me, you said, oh, I don't care about those things, and therefore I'm not serious. Or if one doesn't care about those things, then they're not serious. And so I think
I said that to Perry Ell. I said, if you're not ready to deal with it, go ahead.
So,
go ahead, sorry.
So I think that that's one thing. There are the numbers, okay? And I never said that those aren't important, but I think that what is equally as important is my distinct understanding is that there is a Black experience in this country that has been going on for decades, longer than that, of course.
Centuries,
thank you. It's not safe in many situations to be Black in this country. And the perception of that is real, and the experience of that is real. And I think that that's
what
a real-
What do you mean it's not safe? What do you mean it's not safe? I'm not being flippant.
Wait a minute. Wait. Can I say something? Can I say something?
Sure.
I understand what you're saying. But I think part of our job as reflective people who don't simply obey their first instinctive reaction to an issue is to say, does my fear match up with reality? And in order to do that, You have to look at the numbers. If you are afraid of plane crashes, which a lot of people are, and then you look at how likely you are to die of a plane crash, that can actually have an effect on how fearful you are. Like, you should be much more fearful driving in a car. That's like, you know, I guess it's sort of common knowledge.
Fair enough, but
here's another example. That's even even better example. Jihadist terrorism. A lot of people are, you know, more on the American right have made claims about how afraid they are of jihadist terror, or even better in Europe when the bombs were going off in France in 2015. And if you actually look at how likely you are to be killed by a jihadist, it's very, very low. And it matters that we don't exaggerate those risks, because A, you make people paranoid when they should not be. And then the reaction to it becomes its own issue to deal with.
Mm. So Perry, let me say, so the reason I asked you about unsafe, and I really don't want to bring up this issue, but I don't see any way to not bring it up in at least in a
well, I can answer
way.
You.
Let me just say what I want to say. The like 25 black guys were shot in Chicago, I think 1 week, and even during the pandemic. It is extremely, it's 10 times or something more, or 8 times more unsafe to be black in America than white. But unfortunately and tragically, it is not because of the treatment by whites. And so when you want to bring up that black people feel unsafe in America, I wanted to know what you mean feel unsafe when they walk down the street and they see white people, or feel unsafe because they're likely, because they live in violent neighborhoods. Like, what do you mean?
I'm talking specifically about white people.
Well, that's where the numbers are crucial, because, okay, you know, there's a kidnapping in Iowa, and now my wife won't let the kids walk to the bus stop. This is actually true. She heard some story about some kids that got picked up waiting for the school bus in Iowa. She will not let our kids take the school bus. And the only argument I can make to her is, sweetheart, I know you hear these stories on the news, but here's the actual data. It's just that every story gets a headline.
Noam,
what else can I say to her other than that?
Noam, I really feel like your kids should not be going to school during a pandemic. I think you should be keeping them inside. And I do just want to say one nice thing to you, for sure. I'm very grateful to be here in this conversation. I always am. And I'm certainly aligned with Periel and her thinking a lot of the time. And also, it was funny that you said she sent you poetry. That was a very funny thing. It's certainly rubbed off hanging out with a lot of comedians. And Dan Natterman, what you said was very funny as well, when you were like, Periel, don't speak, because we won't be able to tell whose voice is whose. Periel's voice is the most different than, she should be the only one speaking.
By the way, for you listeners at home, Periel is black.
I can say that about...
Oh, yeah.
Mike, that's not a good point. That's a great point. Periel's voice is the most distinct. Maybe I just enjoy insulting her, and I need to look within. But
Seton, you want to say something? Yeah. Seton, if you could be dictator of America for 10 years,
okay.
Dictator.
Okay.
And the only thing you wanted to do was at the end of that 10 years, you wanted to fix the race problem in America, and you do it in a moral and decent way, what would you do? Where would you start? What would you actually
I'd remove the police department, the justice system, the school system. I'd make universal health care. I'd teach kids how to actually make money. And I'd actually figure out a new way of justice. That's it.
So let's start with the first one. We'd have no police.
I had to figure out. I don't know how to transition to that point, but no, I don't think. Like I said, I don't think justice is a valid form of actual human society. I think it's a flawed form. I think it's. I think there's a point. There's been evidence of smaller tribes. There's one tribe. Oh, I want to say South America or is Africa. I apologize, but it was one where when one villager fucked up, did something horrible, all the villagers would put him in the middle, and every villager would sit down and tell him one good thing about him before, you know, so get him to just fucking change his mind. All we do now is when somebody fucks up, we just tell them how horrible they are, then we throw them in a cage, and then we curse at them, and then we treat them like shit, and we expect them to come back to society and to be good people. So no, I think justice is actually a flawed premise. And that's why right now, this whole idea about Of course, the cops try to create justice on black people, but then black people want more justice to get these riots, and now other black people are mad at those black people, and there's just nothing. Everybody's looking for justice, and nobody's ever going to be satisfied. So I don't like justice.
Have you guys, are you familiar with, I think it's restorative justice? I remember watching Wyatt Cenac's show on HBO, Problem Areas, and it's amazing. He covers, like, in the first season, it's all about, you know, racial injustice, and every episode from a different angle. And there was one particular episode where they sat down with an older couple whose daughter had been killed by her boyfriend or her ex-boyfriend, who had been maybe drunk, angry, whatever it was. And he had been sentenced to, I think, what would have been 40 years in jail. And then they, through a program of restorative justice, they sat down with him. They don't want him, like, they know that he is sorry. They know that, like, it doesn't bring their daughter back. And so they sat down with him and had, like, these, you know, sort of therapeutic sessions wherein, like, that he was then, I think, now only in jail for 20 years because, and they all, the parents of the dead woman were, like, came out of this feeling, you know, happier as much as they could with being able to connect with this person. So in situations where that is possible, like, so many people whose children have been killed, like, don't want the death penalty, even for the person that killed their loved one, because they don't want violence to beget violence. They don't want the grief to beget more grief. So, I mean, certainly, I don't know how we get to no prisons, no mass incarceration, no police, but it's certainly incremental. It's not like make them disappear immediately, but definitely one step at a time.
One more thing, harping on that. There was, I don't know if y'all read Outliers. I'm sure everybody in the circle has read Outliers, but there was, like, I was just reading that chapter about the Hatfields and the McCoys, about there was a whole trend of white people killing each other, white people, all over this justice stuff. So I just want to also harp on the point of, like, black people killing black people. Yeah, but white people kill each other for years, much more. So that's just the culture of guns in our country is a bigger problem. But again, justice is the main course.
I was just going to say, I think we need the police. But I think we conflate police and prisons. Those are two different things. We can have a robust and well-trained and, you know, a lot of police, you know, part of the reason they can be so awful is because they're overworked. Like, there are not enough of them to police a certain neighborhood, so they're not sleeping enough. And even the better half of cops, you know, on overwork can sort of mess up. So, like, having police is one thing. Prison is a different thing. Our sentences are longer than, you know, the vast majority of European countries, and it does very little to deter crime. It doesn't make sense, you know, especially because a lot of people who commit crime in their 20s, by the time they're 40, they're a completely different person. They have less testosterone. They're just, like, a very different person. And yet we have this thing where your third crime can get you a longer sentence when you're much less of a danger to society in your 40s and 50s. So there's all kinds of, and that's been, like, pretty known in criminology for a long time. It's just a matter of, you know, politicians always being able to win on these tough on crime policies, which is a very big problem, but different than getting rid of the police. I don't think that would work. That would just create chaos.
Coleman, I'm not saying do it today.
Who would dictator Coleman? What would dictator Hughes? How would you fix race relations in America?
I couldn't fix race relations in America, but what I would do is I would legalize weed so that cop, you know, because it just creates so many problems. I would decriminalize probably all drugs unless I got a really compelling argument for with one of the more dangerous ones why it should remain criminal. I would, you know, mandate police body cams. I would try to create independent outside review boards, not like civilian review boards where it's like Joe Schmo telling a cop with 20/20 hindsight what he should have done, but like experts that have no like ties to the police adjudicating them, that are independent. So, I mean, those are the immediate things that I would do on the police issue specifically. Ooh,
the fire department, they would be, they're not in the police, and they would be very, I think, measured and objective. Also, maybe we have it be like prison, be like the Israeli military. Like everybody goes to prison from 18 to a couple years later, and then they come out when they're less likely to offend. You know, like everyone should have a service job. Everyone should go to prison, and then we'd make prison a little nicer. I say as a joke. I mean, also, sincerely, bail reform would be great because I think bail mostly doesn't do much. Like, most people show up when they've, like, hardly anybody's jumping bail. Like, the same way, like, hardly anyone's, like, doing voter fraud. Like, all the things, the fears are overblown. And it used to just be, like, the sheriff arrests you, you know, long ago. And then they'd be like, all right, now come back on this day. And most people would. And then, like, so many innocent people, so many poor people, so many, you know, people not yet proven guilty and who might never be proven guilty because they're not guilty will, you know, rot, will just, like, wait in jail. Some of them die in jail because they can't afford, you know, the however many, even a small amount of money. So I think I know I wasn't asked to be a dictator and I don't want to be, but I would dictate bail reform as well.
How about we turn the question to Noam? Noam, if you were the dictator.
I don't know that top down much can be done. I mean, all the things that Coleman said in terms of laws, I would agree, and doing body cams especially. But you know, Dan, I think I was saying that about body cams 10 years ago. I think that Coleman and I read this article recently, but I kind of had felt the same way that intermarriage and interracial, encouraging the races to mix more and more would be a really, really good thing as we come out of it on the other end.
Well, that's basically, you're admitting defeat. You're admitting that we cannot live together unless we're all the same.
Admitting that there is a part of human nature which is never going to go away, which sees the world as us versus them. And we all notice it in ourselves, and that's never going to go away. So maybe that would solve it, or maybe people would just divide on other things, but at least if they divide on other things, it's not quite as ugly as race, I guess. I would try to, you see this both in the white community and the black community, although right now I think it's having a more harmful effect in the black community. I would try to get fewer single parent homes. I would try to see what can be done. We know that a child of a family where the mother and father are together and have stayed married. I mean, Coleman might know the stat by heart, but it's a huge difference in their prospects for success in life than one who didn't. And that at some point is a decision that somebody makes. I'll be able to handle it or whatever it is. I have that close to me in my own family, but
you do realize, Noam, the extension of what you're saying is the complete destruction of certain communities that enjoy being those communities, the Jewish community, many of them.
Yes. I think, you know, that's fine. That's what America, if it means that much to you, you don't have to stay in America. I mean, nobody's going to force you, but that's the thing. And finally,
do you agree, Noam, that like the crack, the drug laws is actually one that took the black men out of the homes in the first place.
I don't know the answer to that.
Here's the thing.
That's a true thing.
People think they can solve mass incarceration by legalizing drugs. They can't. John Pfaff wrote a great book about this. You just look at the numbers of people in prison, ask how many of them are there for homicide, aggravated assault, you know, drugs. The people that are there for only drug crimes, it's less than 1 in 5 people in prisons in America. You could release them all, and we would still have probably the highest incarceration rate in the world.
Are those homicides drug related? How many of those homicides are not drug related?
That's a good question. I mean, some of the homicide is enabled by the fact that drugs are illegal to begin with. So that
I just know a person who shot a dude over a weed deal. So I'm just saying, like, people are crazy. So not that I'm defending anybody, but I'm just saying.
Also, Coleman.
I didn't get my last thing out, but I want to say, I have kids now, and I've said this before, and I've said to my wife, like, I can't even imagine. It takes up all our time, my wife and me together, and we have means, and we live in a very safe neighborhood where we don't really worry about the influences and their peers and all that stuff. And still, I know if I didn't devote if I didn't see parenthood as basically a full-time job, my kids would be sacrificed. They would not do their homework. They wouldn't amount to anything. And so, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be an unwed black woman in a poor neighborhood where the peers and the neighborhoods are violent, whatever it is. These kids are being relegated to hopelessness. And it's like my grandfather, when I was a little boy, I went to Israel with my father to visit my grandfather. And at that time in Israel, there was a lot of people dying in car accidents in Tel Aviv. And my grandfather said to my father, says, you know, Menachem, in Israel, Jewish life is very, very precious, but only when it's threatened by Arabs. And that is very much a human nature, meaning that, yes, it's very important and very ugly to see racism, especially racism that leads to death. But we also have to worry about the car accidents that are happening within the community, which I'm referring to the violence within the community, the children growing up without hope, even if they never saw a white person. And, these are things that are not easy for a white guy to say. And I'll add to it that I can't imagine how the crime rate doesn't drive a resentment with the police, even if the police were angels. If you have like in New York where 98.6% of shootings are in the non-white community, according to the FBI statistics, 98.6, you're going to have cops constantly interacting suspiciously with the community of color, constantly, every day, over and over, until they can't fucking take it anymore, because most of them are innocent. 99% of them are innocent. But this is an untenable situation to have crime stats like that. And no matter how good the cops are, just the interactions alone are going to make people boil over. I worry.
So I argue that the situation wouldn't boil over if they didn't have as many laws. And I'm not just referring to I'm not just referring to drug laws. Let's talk about social distancing. It's in the paper now. The difference in the social distancing execution alone. I saw that video. There was a dude thrown on the ground, hanging out while other white people were jogging. So
you're gonna like me now. I said 25 years ago when they passed a seatbelt law.
It's just going
to give cops another excuse to pull black people over.
Yes. People think that more laws creates a better society, and more laws creates just more criminals. That is the thing. More laws does not create more safety.
Yeah. No, may I say, here is where I agree with you. I like the idea of the two-parent household. In fact, I like it so much, I think mandatory polyamory, mandatory triads, at least nice. Quads. Sincerely, children being raised in those households, I would love to see the data on when there's more than two parents available, how much that helps the children. Sincerely, of course, I'm into data for you. I also like, Coleman, when you talked about how police are overworked, certainly decriminalizing weed, decriminalizing drugs, prostitution, sex work, all of these things will give police fewer, like if they have fewer laws, fewer crimes, fewer things to look for, then they can hopefully get more rest and not have to worry.
I will fix the race problem. I will fix the race problem. I forgot. I've said this many times and I've totally forgot it. There should be mandatory 2 years public service, not necessarily military, but with it, a la a draft where all Americans are thrown in together, black, white, Asian, whatever it is, and get to know each other and get to build real relationships with people other than themselves, I believe. Because one of the problems with even discussing this stuff often is that the people discussing it have no common love for each other. They just don't. Mm. And black people need to get to know white people just as much as white people need to get to know black people and understand that I teased Mike, but I do feel that way. It's not just that they're just not something you read about in the papers and in books, And I do notice that a lot of really, really woke people, they actually have very few close relationships with anybody that they're fighting for. They don't really have deep relationships with black friends and stuff.
Do you have data on that, Noam?
No, I said I noticed.
I will notice that. I will say it's a lot easier in America to not talk to a black person than it is to not know about white people. I know a lot more black people who know white people just as a rule. We got to know where y'all are at all times. And white people will be like, are there black people in the room? So that's that's a little bit of a difference there.
Coleman nodded no at national service, and he also wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I just don't. I hate the idea that I wouldn't get to choose how to spend 2 years of my life. But
I'm a dictator, so that's why I did it.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people in prison who don't get to decide as well what they do with a few years of their life.
That's not the same thing because they committed a crime to get there.
Not everyone in prison.
He's a comedian.
Some of them had a gun thrown on them by a cop.
It's true. Not everything that I say is backed by data as well.
So go ahead, Coleman. Do you want to say something else?
I was going to say, you know, this, you said, you know, with the overworked police officers, we take them off of these petty drug cases that are literally solving nothing, and they would have time to actually focus on their jobs. And one of their most important jobs is solving homicides and violent crimes. And there are places in this country where the majority of homicides go unsolved. And by the majority, I mean, like in the worst, most dangerous neighborhoods in Chicago, there are estimates sometimes of over 90% of murders going unsolved.
So quick question. So basically, if there were no police, they would solve about the same number of crimes as with the police.
No, there'd be more crimes. And what percent of those homicides are of black people?
Almost 100. Almost 100%.
Let's be clear. Bunch of white people down around the country too. Let's not lie. We just don't talk about it very much, but they're shooting each other constantly too.
Yes, but okay. So if you look at it, look at what is the number one cause of death for black men. Let's see, I'm what am I? 24. Black men, 24. Number one cause of death according to the CDC is homicide.
Yes.
That is not true. That is not true of white men, Hispanic men. In fact, it's worse than that because the number one cause of death for black men in their 20s,
American black men kills
more than numbers 2 through 10 on that same list. So it's just like it's completely focused on this one demographic. It's even an age based thing. Like it's 15 to early 30s with a focus on the 20s. And that
I hated being 24, nigga. I ain't gonna lie to you. I hated it. I hated every second of it. I hated how cops fuck with me. I remember one time, this random story, random cop story since we're just hanging out. I remember one time I was coming from work. It was about 2 a.m. I walked right outside of the hotel. I was working at a hotel. I had my hoodie on. I remember this plainclothes cop car pulled out. 5 dudes jumped out of this car and fucking grabbed me. And they put my head off. And they're like, oh, that's not you. And they're like, get a haircut. They just kind of pushed me and told me to move on. I know it's not a horrible police story. It's just one of those, it happens all the time. I just got to get used to it.
No, don't bury the lead, though.
I think that's serious. That's exactly my point. I think that's very serious. Because for those few minutes, whatever it is, your entire body, all your vital signs are on at maximum.
Yes.
And it's angering. And then, go ahead.
I was just saying, these neighborhoods where 90% of murders are going unsolved, the cops, even when the cops are trying to do their jobs and are doing it well, if you have a neighborhood that's been over-policed on petty drug crime, and situations where people's hair, you know, hair has been grabbed and the detective comes asking questions, you have no reason to believe that these people really care about you, that they have your best interests at heart, that when they say they're going to put you in witness protection and protect you, that they're actually going to make good on that promise. And that all contributes to why the crime rate is so high in some of these places.
What about having the police live in the communities? Is there any like data on that?
I don't know that I've seen data on that, but anecdotally, the best detectives are the ones that know people by name, know business owners by name, are respected and trusted. They know who to talk to. They have confidential informants.
Coleman, what do you think about making an effort to increase a black presence in the police force? Do you think that's a solution?
Well, they tried that in the 40s, so.
Yeah. They mean a lot of places have done that. Already, in the 60s too. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen so much evidence that black cops are any different than white cops.
Yeah, but the incidents are less hard to watch.
I mean,
that is true.
There's that whole rule.
I'm serious.
There's a rule though. The whole every rap song back in the early 90s was like, yo, black cops are much worse than white cops.
Right, if Floyd had his head under the knee of a black cop.
There have been riots.
That guy would be in jail already because they already got that other black cop in jail.
No, but would there have been riots? I think that's a really interesting question to ask because I don't know the answer to that, but it does seem like because of the way we think about race, the optics are everything in these cases. You see a white cop do the same thing to a white person, and it's barbaric and it hits you hard, but there's some extra little judge that it actually doesn't have, even if it's just as cruel.
Yeah, if I saw a gang of any color, Asians, blacks, whatever it is, beating up a Jewish guy with a yarmulke on, I can't help. I would try to control myself and not jump to conclusions. But viscerally, you say those fucking Asians are beating up the Jew, right? But if I saw a bunch of Jews beating up one of their own, it's a totally different thing that I'm seeing. It's not. I mean, it's really night and day. It's completely different. And we are all slaves to that visceral reaction within us. I don't know how you can train it out of us.
Noam, yeah. You said we're all slaves. Okay,
we're all slaves.
And that was a weird choice of words. But I will say though, back to the psychotherapy shit. We are as a nation, we need to have a revolution about how we handle our minds. We don't do religion no more. So, and we don't really accept therapy. Half of us do, half of us don't. There needs to be a revolution on that because the trauma triggers that we're talking about now are so apparent. We're you know, like, yeah, that's what you said, no, I'm like, we need to figure out a way to solve that problem. It's definitely a mental problem.
Seton, can I ask you a question? It's going Absolutely. To sound important, but it's not going to be. I'm just going to be joking.
Go ahead.
In that situation, I'm so sorry that you've experienced, you know, the violence and the fear that you have, but did you get a haircut? That's my question.
Yeah, man, I did.
Okay, thank you.
I employed a Negro. And come over. And yeah, man, I actually want this. I kind of want my barber to come to my house. I'm sick of going to barbershops like this.
I mean, I think also what we need, I think what you said about therapy, what you said about, you know, addressing like not only historical trauma, but like, you know, life in our lifetime, the things, yeah. The way that we are socialized as humans, but also certainly as men, like the way that men are socialized in our society is like the people who are like, I don't like therapy. I would say, I don't have the data, but my guess is that more of them will skew male. Like the idea of, you know, older men, like, I don't know what the numbers are. Like certainly more people that I know are saying things like you are like, therapy is good. Addressing trauma is good. And talking about, you know, talking about your feelings is a better way of addressing your anger than being violent, which is what a lot of people do the reverse of.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right. That I have a Zoom show in 15 minutes, but you all don't need me. I don't know if we're wrapping things up or...
We have to. We're way over time. Anybody else have any final thoughts they want to share? Hopes, dreams?
Nice to see Coleman. Nice to see you, man.
Great to see you too, Seton.
I would like for the new dictatorship of America to be a team of Coleman and Seton and Periel. That's what I want in charge.
Triumvirate, if you will.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that vote of confidence. Can we share Mike and Seton's new album information?
Do we have? Yes, of course we can.
Certainly. Yeah. Hold
on. I have it here. So this is you don't want to get that off there. This is Seton Smith's new album, the comedy, the Lockdown Special.
Yeah.
Available where?
YouTube.com. Seton Smith.
Available YouTube.com. Mike Kaplan, aka that's a dove on his head.
Oh yeah.
Peace sign. And what a shock that this would be woke comedy. So those are two. And where's yours available, Mike?
You can download on iTunes. You can stream it wherever you stream albums. You're listening to this. I believe if you search for my name and AKA, you will find it.
Don't forget to read all of Coleman Hughes's articles at City Journal. Is it Coleman?
Yes.
Well, are you no longer writing for Quillette?
No longer.
You haven't told me anything. We're friends, aren't we? You never mentioned it to me.
And Noam, what do you have against birds?
Nothing. You're talking about that privately.
Coleman has a podcast as well, Conversations with Coleman.
Conversations with Coleman. And anything, I kind of wish we were all hanging out because I don't really want this to end, but we have to end.
No, we'll see each other again in person.
Don't worry, man. Racism's not going in. We can talk again.
Well, I believe I think that racism, yeah, there's no cure for it. It has to be managed, like diabetes. But that's what
I think I have to say that I think the overwhelming majority of people of every color, even if they have certain views, chauvinistic views about their people, I don't want my son to marry one, whatever it is, are abhor racial violence like this. I think it's very little constituency in 2020 for wanting to see anybody hurt, beaten up, horribly mistreated based on their race. And it pains me that this is becoming kind of the rap on America. I think it's deeply unfair without regards to the problems within the police department. I think America is by no means a collection of mostly bad people. I really don't.
I think if you don't address, I mean, I think the lack of addressing them after slavery this whole time, I mean, I think saying apology, just apologizing is not the solution. I think there's a more of a systematic structure thing. And that's why I think the bad reputation is.
Well, then Dictator Smith ought to have some better suggestions, because that was my question.
What are you talking about?
How do you address it? I was in a certain way calling that issue, like, okay, you say we should address it, we've wasted our time, we haven't done it, like, okay, what would you do? It's not the answers are not that apparent. That's yes. All I'm saying.
Yeah. Eliminate all the bullshit laws and the tic-tac laws that are putting black people in the position they are, which I've said 1,000 times and it's okay. Been going on.
Okay. Most of the violence is coming from men, so let's just put women in charge of everything, and I think let's try that for a while.
That's not a bad idea.
Good call.
Okay, also you can send comments and suggestions to podcast@comedyseller.com. Tell us what you like, what you don't like about the podcast, and who you might want to see on, who you might want to see back. Do you want to see Mike Kaplan back on? Well, that's all. We can't read your mind. So we'll see you next time. We have Howie Mandel will be with us, I believe, on the next show. Is that right, Perio?
I think there's a briefcase, and you get to decide whether you want Howie Mandel or a different person.
Yes, Howie Mandel
will be a little bit less charged, but hopefully.
And follow us on @livefromthetable on Instagram.
All right, everybody. See you next time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Good night. Whoops.